So imagine walking into an emergency room.
Okay.
You have a broken arm.
Right.
Right. You are in just immense pain. And frankly, you're just looking for someone to tell you where to go.
Yeah, you just need a doctor.
Exactly. So you walk up to the receptionist behind the glass, fully expecting them to, you know, take your insurance card, maybe page a doctor.
Right. Just do the triage.
But instead, the receptionist leaps over the desk, tackles you to the waiting room floor, pulls out a scalpel, and just yells, "All right, let's get this bone reset right now."
Oh, my God.
Right. It's terrifying. It's entirely bizarre. But that exact experience, that is exactly what you are putting your customers through every single time you try to actually sell a product directly inside an email.
It's just a complete violation of what that environment is even for. I mean, you are basically asking a routing mechanism to perform a surgical operation.
Yeah.
And yet this fundamental misunderstanding of the digital ecosystem, it happens like millions of times a day in inboxes all over the world.
It really does. So today, we are pulling from a stack of foundational email marketing blueprints. And we're specifically zeroing in on Chapter 6, which is all about the mechanics of pre-selling.
Right.
We're looking heavily at deliverability data and algorithmic rules curated by Jimmy Kim. And the mission for this deep dive today is to figure out exactly why most businesses are just burning their email list to the ground.
Oh, completely destroying them.
Yeah. And we're going to show you how to master the psychological handoff required to actually warm up an audience. We're going to get into the strict algorithmic rules for surviving spam filters and, you know, make sure your list becomes an actual profitable long-term asset.
Which is huge, because if we look at the core argument in these blueprints, it really challenges this default, this aggressive posture of modern business.
Like the always be closing mindset.
Exactly. We are so conditioned to seize every single opportunity to make the pitch. Like the instinct is just to present the features, the benefits, the pricing tiers, the money back guarantee, just all at once, the exact second we get someone's attention. But the digital inbox is this highly hostile, super distracted psychological environment. It requires a completely different approach.
But okay, wait. I'm struggling to apply this universally, though. Like, let's say I'm selling a really highly technical $10,000 B2B software platform.
Okay, sure.
If I don't give the reader at least a comprehensive breakdown of the core features in the email, aren't they just going to ignore the link entirely?
You'd think so, right?
Yeah. I mean, they have no context. Why would an executive click a link if the email hasn't already convinced them of the software's value?
So that is the exact fear that drives marketers to write these dense 1,000-word emails that read like literal technical manual.
I get those all the time.
Right. But we have to separate the concept of educating from the concept of selling. In a complex B2B scenario, yes, you have to provide context, but providing all the information like the pricing, the timeline, every single feature, it actually kills the curiosity gap.
Oh, because there's no mystery left.
Exactly. Human beings are hardwired to seek closure. It's known in psychology as the Zeigarnik effect.
The Zeigarnik effect.
Yeah. Our brains actually remember uncompleted or interrupted tasks way better than completed ones. So when you create a mystery or highlight a really specific painful problem that this executive is facing, but you don't immediately give away the whole blueprint of the solution, the brain naturally wants to close that loop.
Oh, wow. So if you give them the entire pitch right there in the email, you've essentially closed the loop for them in the inbox.
Precisely. There's just no psychological compulsion to click the link anymore. They have all the data they need to make a simple yes or no decision right then there.
And since they're probably reading this between meetings or like waiting in line for coffee.
Right. The cognitive load of evaluating a $10,000 software platform while getting coffee is just way too high. So their answer defaults to no, or, you know, I'll read this later, which we all know means never.
Never.
The whole job of the email is just to generate enough focused excitement and expectation to force the click.
Which brings us right back to the triage concept. The email is the receptionist.
Exactly.
Your job is simply routing. Your job is to say, hey, I see you have a massive problem with your supply chain logistics, and our head surgeon has developed this controversial new framework for fixing it. Let me take you to their office.
Yeah, because the receptionist and the surgeon require completely different environments.
Right.
The email sets the stage. The destination, whether that's a long-form sales letter, a huge 40-minute video sales letter, or like an interactive webinar, that destination is the surgeon.
It's the operating room.
Exactly. That page is designed to hold their attention, isolate them from the distractions of their inbox, and perform the actual operation, which is the selling.
So if you're listening to this right now, I want you to think about the last promotional email you sent. Did you ask for the sale or did you ask for the click?
That's a great question.
Because the data in this chapter suggests that an email marketer really only has three job functions. You create excitement, you edify the product or the destination page, and you generate clicks. That's it. Nowhere in that job description does it say close the deal.
And honestly, doing that requires radical restraint.
Restraint.
You have to edify the destination, like build credibility for the page they're about to visit. And then you just have to abruptly stop typing. You tell them why they need to go watch the video, set the expectation that the problem will be fixed, and then just step out of the way.
But, you know, this entire pre-selling handoff, it completely assumes they actually open the email in the first place.
Well, yes. Obviously.
Right. Because the most perfectly restrained, beautifully edified email is utterly useless if it's just sitting unread.
100%.
And the blueprints we're looking at today introduce this metric that, honestly, completely reframes how we should be spending our time.
Yeah.
The 70% rule.
This is huge. The premise here is that the subject line is 70% of the battle in email marketing.
Which is wild to think about.
It is. But mathematically, it means if you spend 3 hours drafting the perfect email body, you should theoretically be spending 7 hours brainstorming the subject line.
That ratio feels insane at first glance. 7 hours on a subject line.
I know, it sounds ridiculous. But if you look at the raw mechanics of engagement, it totally makes sense.
Right, because if you have a list of, say, 10,000 people and a mediocre subject line gets a 10% open rate, you're only pitching to 1,000 people.
Exactly. But if you spend real time cracking the psychology of that subject line and you bump it to a 30% open rate,
you've just tripled your revenue potential.
Yes, without changing a single word of the actual product pitch inside the email.
Wow.
The text uses two analogies to solidify this. The first is a college exam.
Oh, I love this one.
Right. If your professor hands you a 50-question final and explicitly states that question number one is worth 70% of your total grade.
I mean, any rational student would dedicate all their cognitive resources to agonizing over that single question.
Exactly. You wouldn't even glance at the other 49 questions until you were absolutely certain you had secured that 70%.
You'd be crazy to start on question two.
Right. And the second analogy is the classic tree falling in a forest philosophical puzzle.
Right. If a tree falls and no one hears it, does it make a sound?
Exactly. If you send an email with a genuinely life-changing message, but it has a careless subject line and nobody opens it, did you really even send an email?
In terms of business outcomes, no.
You did not. Yet, despite knowing this, creators and businesses routinely treat the subject line as just this total afterthought.
Yeah, like something you slap on right before you hit send.
Exactly. And this phenomenon is deeply rooted in cognitive depletion and the curse of knowledge.
The curse of knowledge. Wait, explain that.
So by the time a creator finishes writing a complex email, they are experiencing massive decision fatigue. They've spent hours tweaking sentences, formatting paragraphs, refining the whole argument.
Yeah, they're exhausted.
Right. And they intimately understand the immense value locked inside that email body because they just created it.
So they subconsciously project that understanding onto the subscriber. They assume the reader just magically knows it's valuable.
Yes, exactly. Because the creator knows it's valuable, they implicitly assume the audience will sense that value. So they slap a generic label on it, like weekly update or, you know, new features announced, and they just hit send.
They forget the user's perspective entirely.
Completely. The user is staring at an inbox flooded with hundreds of competing priorities. They are scanning aggressively, like they are actively looking for an excuse to delete your message just to reduce their own cognitive load.
Wow. So your subject line is literally the singular defense mechanism against that delete button.
It is the only thing standing between you and the trash folder.
Let's elevate this, though, because getting past the human's delete button is actually just step two.
Right.
What I found most compelling in Jimmy Kim's deliverability data is the reality of the algorithmic gatekeepers.
Oh, the machines.
Yes. Before a human being's optic nerve ever even processes your subject line, a machine has already read it analyzed it against billions of historical data points, and decided whether you are even worthy of the inbox.
Yeah, we're talking about the back-end architecture of Gmail, Outlook, Yahoo, Apple Mail. And these aren't just simple keyword blockers anymore.
They're way more advanced than that now.
Oh, yeah. They are highly sophisticated Bayesian learning models. They assign a sender reputation score to your IP address and your domain based on continuous behavioral analysis.
So they're always watching what you do.
Always. And if you trigger their spam filters, you don't just get a low open rate. You are exiled to the promotional tab or the junk folder, and your open rate essentially flatlines to zero.
It turns out these algorithms are essentially hunting for very specific sociological footprints. Like, looking at the data, I see two main red flags that trigger these filters: aggression and financial desperation.
Yep, those are the big two.
So let's dissect the aggression triggers first. Rule number one from the data: no more than three punctuation marks in your subject line. And heavily limit capitalizing all the letters of any word.
Right. And to understand why the algorithm cares so much about punctuation, you have to look at the history of spam.
Yeah, take me back.
In the early days of email marketing, the whole strategy was just volume and visual disruption. Spammers realized that if an inbox was mostly lowercase text, an all caps subject line with 5 exclamation points would immediately draw the human eye.
It's the digital equivalent of like wearing a neon strobe light to a funeral. It breaks the visual plane.
Precisely. But machine learning models adapt.
Right.
The algorithms learn that high quality, reputable businesses, the ones users actually want to hear from, they rarely resort to screaming.
That's true. If my bank is sending me a statement, they don't use all caps and exclamation points. They just use standard sentence case.
Exactly. The algorithm views excessive punctuation not as enthusiasm, but as an anomalous, aggressive behavior. It's typical of a bad actor trying to artificially hijack attention.
So 3 punctuation marks is the absolute threshold before the model flags you for review.
Yes. Anything more than 3, and you're in the danger zone.
And the all caps rule functions on the exact same logic, doesn't it?
It does.
When I open my primary inbox, the emails from friends, colleagues, premium brands, they're visually calm. Desperate marketers yell. Confident businesses just speak.
Exactly. So if you send an email with the subject line, like, huge sale, in all caps, with 3 exclamation points.
The algorithm doesn't even read the words, does it?
No. It reads the metadata of the capitalization and the punctuation density, compares it to historical spam patterns, and just drops you straight in the junk folder.
That's fascinating. Now, let's look at the second category.
Yeah.
Financial desperation. The data highlights 3 specific triggers here. Avoid the word guaranteed at all costs. Completely avoid the dollar sign symbol. And never combine the words make and money in close proximity.
Let's really dig into this because it speaks to sender reputation scores.
Yeah, I assume the dollar sign penalty is directly tied to the explosion of financial phishing scams.
It is entirely tied to risk mitigation. Financial spam is arguably the most malicious category of unwanted email out there.
Right, like phishing scams designed to steal login credentials, fake invoices, wire fraud.
Exactly. They all orbit around the concept of currency. So when a Bayesian spam filter detects a dollar sign in a subject line, it immediately elevates the risk profile of that email.
Does it just ban the email instantly?
Not an instant ban, no. But it drastically increases your spam score.
Okay, so if your domain already has a slightly depressed reputation from previous low engagement,
then that dollar sign is the tipping point. It pushes you right over the edge into the spam folder.
Wow. And what about the word guaranteed? Because if I'm selling a premium consulting package and I offer a legally binding 30-day money-back guarantee, why am I being penalized for offering consumer protection?
It feels unfair, right? But you are basically dealing with the collateral damage of the internet's early history.
Wild West days.
Exactly. During the early 2000s, before CAN spam regulations and sophisticated filters, the phrase guaranteed was the universal calling card of the snake oil salesman.
Oh, right. Guaranteed weight loss pills. Guaranteed overnight wealth.
Guaranteed search engine rankings.
Yeah.
Yeah. The sheer volume of user complaints associated with that specific word basically forced email providers to effectively blacklist it.
So the algorithm doesn't care about my legitimate consulting business.
No. The algorithm cannot read your terms of service to verify if your guarantee is legally binding. It only knows that historically, emails containing that word generate insanely high complaint rates.
So you just pivot the language. Instead of guaranteed, you say, like, my personal promise, or risk-free trial.
Exactly. You achieve the exact same psychological comfort for the buyer, but you don't trip the algorithmic wire.
But the most absolute non-negotiable rule in this financial category is the combination of the words make and money.
Oh, yeah. This one is brutal.
Why is that specific pairing so toxic?
The make money online niche has historically just been a swamp. Pyramid schemes, multi-level marketing scams, completely unregulated financial advice.
Right.
The algorithms have literally been trained by billions of angry users hitting the report spam button on emails promising them passive income.
So it's a nuclear trigger.
It is a nuclear trigger. It does not matter if you are a tenured professor of macroeconomics sending a deeply researched newsletter about systemic wealth generation. If you put make money in the subject line, your deliverability will plummet.
That's just wild. It's fascinating because these algorithms are basically serving as sociological archives. They have literally learned from our collective bad behavior over the decades.
They absolutely have.
The final algorithmic rule in the data is structural, it says. Never start the subject line with a number or a punctuation mark, like a bracket or an asterisk.
Mm.
This one seems less about spam and more about automation footprints.
That's exactly what it is. Natural language processing models are constantly looking for human-to-human typing patterns.
Okay.
For years, automated spam bots would use leading numbers or symbols to try and bypass alphabetical sorting mechanisms, or simply just to look different in the inbox.
Right, to stand out.
But a human naturally starts a sentence with a letter. When you start with a bracket, you are signaling to the machine that this email was likely generated by a piece of broadcast software rather than typed by an individual.
And that reduces your organic sender score.
It does.
Wow. So if you're listening to this and you currently use brackets like, you know, new W podcast at the beginning of every email, you are actively degrading your sender reputation right now.
You really are.
The primary takeaway here is that deliverability is the absolute foundation of email marketing. You have to audit every single subject line against these algorithmic triggers. Because if you don't survive the machine, you never even get the chance to charm the human.
Right. But assuming you have maintained a pristine sender reputation and you've bypassed the algorithms, you now face the psychological challenge of the human reader.
The human element.
Exactly. The data outlines three distinct strategies for crafting an irresistible hook once you reach the inbox. Delivering a superb benefit, creating mysterious intrigue, and leveraging the highly pertinent yet dangerous tool of negative subject lines.
Let's unpack the benefit-driven strategy first, because I think it's where most legitimate businesses feel the most comfortable. It's the classic, what's in it for me approach.
Right.
The example from the materials is, revealed, 7 foods that shed 10 pounds.
It is the absolute workhorse of email marketing. It relies on extreme clarity over cleverness.
Yeah, there's no confusion there.
Exactly. The benefit is highly specific, shedding 10 pounds. The vehicle is quantified 7 foods. Notice that it does not tell you which foods.
Ah, the curiosity gap again.
Right. It promises a measurable transformation in exchange for the microaction of just opening the email.
Mm-hmm.
If your audience is highly targeted, a clear benefit will consistently perform well because it respects their time.
The problem, though, is list fatigue. If every single email I get from you is 5 ways to boost revenue or 3 steps to better sleep, I become blind to the structure. The inbox just becomes monotonous.
Yes, the brain tunes it out.
That's where we pivot to the second strategy, which is mysterious intrigue.
Intrigue leverages the curiosity gap we discussed earlier, but it takes it to the extreme. The data refers to this as catchy but confusing.
Catchy but confusing. I like that.
The goal is to introduce a concept or a statement so unexpected that the reader's brain demands resolution.
And the examples provided in the book are brilliantly simple. One is literally just the word wow.
Just wow.
Yeah. Another is the ugliest website in the world. But my absolute favorite, and I see this used occasionally, is, hey, I'm so embarrassed.
That is a classic.
I really want to pause on this one because it speaks to the unique parasocial environment of the email inbox.
It really does. The inbox is one of the last truly personal digital spaces we have.
Yeah, social media is a public square, but the inbox is your living room.
Exactly. It is where you receive communication from your boss, updates from your child's school, notes from your spouse. When a marketer infiltrates that space with a hyper-polished corporate brochure, it feels intrusive. But right, when you use a subject line like, hey, I'm so embarrassed, you are mimicking the exact tone and vulnerability of a close friend.
That is so true. If a friend texted me, I'm so embarrassed,
yeah,
my immediate visceral reaction is to reply, oh no, what happened?
Exactly. It completely shatters the corporate wall. You are stepping down from the pedestal of the expert marketer and presenting yourself as a flawed human being.
And the reader is just compelled to open the email to find out what caused the embarrassment. It effectively bypasses all their standard advertising defense mechanisms.
It's incredibly powerful.
Which perfectly transitions us into the third strategy, which the data identifies as a secret weapon, the negative subject line.
The dangerous one.
Very dangerous. The examples are super aggressive, like, this made me so mad, or I lost my temper, or this is the most unfair website in the world. We really have to dive into the evolutionary psychology of this.
Yeah, let's go there.
Why is a human being fundamentally more likely to click, this made me so mad, than this made me so happy?
We are entering the territory of negativity bias. From an evolutionary perspective, our brains are not optimized for happiness, they are optimized for survival.
Right.
In a primal environment, a negative stimulus, like the rustle of a predator in the bushes, or a sudden change in weather that represents an immediate threat that requires instant attention and action.
You have to react or you die.
Exactly. A positive stimulus, like a beautiful sunset or a pleasant breeze, it's nice, but ignoring it will not result in death.
So our amygdala is basically scanning our email inbox looking for predators.
Essentially, yes.
Yeah.
Modern humans process digital information using ancient hardware.
I love that phrase, ancient hardware.
Right. When we encounter negative emotion, conflict, or injustice, it is highly arousing to our nervous system. It signals that a social norm has been violated.
So when you see a subject line that says, I lost my temper, your brain instantly recognizes conflict.
Yes. We are drawn to scandal and the breaking of patterns because our survival instincts literally demand we understand the nature of the threat.
And from a purely marketing standpoint, it acts as a massive pattern interrupt. Think about it. We are currently suffocating in this digital culture of toxic positivity.
Oh, especially on platforms like LinkedIn.
Yes. Every brand on LinkedIn is thrilled to announce something. Every corporate newsletter is so excited to share our new journey. It is exhausting, and it is entirely devoid of authenticity.
It all sounds exactly the same.
So when someone finally drops a facade and says, this made me so furious, it feels incredibly real.
It does cut through the noise, but, and this is a massive, but it comes with a severe structural warning.
Right. You can't just be angry all the time.
Exactly. You are dealing with highly volatile psychological material. If you use negative emotion constantly, you become an emotional vampire to your list.
Right. If you're furious every Tuesday, it's no longer an emergency. It's just a personality disorder.
Haha, exactly. Your audience will experience empathy fatigue. They will realize that you are manufacturing outrage just to manipulate their attention, and they will unsubscribe to protect their own mental peace.
So what's the strategic application then?
The strategic application is crucial. You deploy the negative emotion trick to create a massive spike in open rates during, say, a critical campaign launch. But you must heavily dilute it with benefits and intrigue throughout the rest of the year.
Use it sparingly.
Very sparingly.
Okay, so let's assume we've executed this perfectly. We maintained our IP reputation. We navigated the Bayesian spam filters. Mm. We leveraged evolutionary psychology to craft an irresistible hook. And the user has actually opened the email.
We made it to the 30%.
We are now in the realm of the 30%. The sole purpose of the body copy is to get the click. And the deliverability data outlines a very specific set of formatting rules that optimize for clicks while simultaneously keeping you out of algorithmic spam traps on the back end.
This part is so important because the visual formatting of the email is the physical manifestation of the pre-selling handoff.
How so?
If the email looks dense, complicated, or just overly commercial, the psychological spell of curiosity is broken immediately.
So let's break down the mechanics of this formatting. The data says, always send HTML, not just plain text, which, you know, gives you tracking capabilities and formatting control.
Right.
But then it immediately dictates. Use bold and italics to break things up visually, avoid big blocky paragraphs, and stick to basic templates.
This all revolves around the concept of mobile scannability and cognitive load.
Because everyone reads on their phone now.
Exactly. And eye tracking studies consistently show that people do not actually read emails. They scan them in an F-shaped pattern, typically on a mobile device while they're multitasking. So a 4-sentence paragraph that looks perfectly normal and legible on a 27-inch desktop monitor It condenses into a massive, intimidating wall of text on a smartphone screen.
It looked like a legal contract.
Precisely. And when a user sees a wall of text, their brain subconsciously calculates the cognitive effort required to read it. They decide it's too high and they just back out.
So what's the fix?
You must utilize short sentences and single sentence paragraphs. You are engineering white space.
White space.
Yeah. White space gives the eye a place to rest and makes the reading experience feel totally effortless. You use bolding and italics not just for emphasis, but to serve as visual stepping stones.
Oh, to pull the scanner's eye down the page.
Exactly. Straight down the page, directly toward the link.
That makes total sense.
Yeah.
But the most counterintuitive piece of data here is the rule regarding design. The quote from the text is, "Fancy designs lead to a drop in results," which is wild. Mm-hmm. If you're listening right now, open your promotional tab. You'll see dozens of highly designed multi-column HTML emails with custom graphics, embedded videos, and perfectly branded color palettes.
Does it look gorgeous?
They do. So why does the data suggest that spending thousands of dollars on a beautiful design actually hurts your conversion rate?
It comes back to cognitive dissonance and defense mechanisms.
Okay, unpack that.
When you receive a highly designed graphical email, it is the digital equivalent of receiving a glossy, full-color corporate brochure in your physical mailbox.
Oh, yeah.
What is your immediate reaction to a glossy brochure in the mail?
I mean, I instantly recognize it as junk mail. I know it costs money to print, I know it's a mass broadcast, and I throw it in the recycling bin without reading a single word.
Exactly. Our brains have developed highly efficient filters for advertising. A beautiful design literally screams corporate marketing campaign. It triggers the user's defense mechanisms before they even process the copy.
They don't even read the words because the design told them it's a pitch.
Right. Now contrast that with receiving a plain white envelope containing a handwritten letter on standard lined paper.
You sit down, you pay attention, and you read it.
Because it signals a one-to-one human relationship.
That is so profound.
It is. A plain, basic, quote-unquote ugly email template that looks exactly like a message you would receive from a colleague or a family member, it flies completely under the radar of our advertising defenses.
Because the aesthetic of the email must match the personal, vulnerable tone of the copy.
Yes. Think about it. If you use the "I'm embarrassed" subject line, but the email opens to reveal a highly polished graphical template with a massive corporate logo and social media icons in the footer.
The cognitive dissonance destroys trust instantly.
Instantly. The user feels tricked. Ugly, basic templates consistently outconvert highly designed corporate newsletters because they foster authenticity.
It's the paradox of professionalism.
Yeah.
We assume looking highly polished makes us more credible, but in the inbox, it just makes us look like a commercial. Wrapping up the body copy rules, the data reiterate avoiding the spam triggers within the text itself too. Avoid guaranteed. Avoid the make money combination, and do not overuse crazy characters like rows of asterisks or equal signs.
Right, because the visual rendering of excessive characters like a huge row of equal signs can actually trigger HTML to plain text mismatch flags in spam filters.
Daily.
Yeah, it gives the algorithm just another excuse to categorize you as promotional junk. The algorithm evaluates the entire package, the subject line, the formatting, the character density, and the domain reputation.
It's all connected. So if we step back and survey everything we've unpacked today, the ER receptionist analogy, the Zeigarnik effect of unclosed loops, the Bayesian spam filters, the evolutionary psychology of negativity bias, and the raw conversion power of ugly templates. How do we synthesize this?
Right. What's the big picture?
Yeah. What is the unifying theory of this chapter?
If you distill all of this data and psychology into a single guiding principle, the soul of this strategy is restraint. Absolute restraint. The amateur marketer operates from a place of deep anxiety. They believe they have to force the issue.
They want to do it all at once.
Exactly. They try to educate, sell, and close the deal all in one email. They overdesign the template because they desperately want to look impressive. They write incredibly dense paragraphs explaining every minute feature.
And they scream in all caps in the subject line out of a desperate, panicked need to be noticed.
They are the receptionist jumping over the desk with a scalpel. They are doing too much in the wrong room.
Wow. That brings it all full circle.
But the master marketer operates from a place of quiet confidence. They do less. They use restraint to calmly walk past the algorithmic bouncers without waving any red flags.
Right.
They use restraint to offer just a single, highly focused spark of curiosity or a simple benefit in the subject line. They fan that spark slightly with a visually basic, highly readable message that feels like it came from a friend.
And then
they execute the ultimate act of restraint. They stop talking, they point to the door, they let the user click the link, and they allow the sales page to do the heavy lifting. Mastering this ecosystem is mastering the art of doing exactly enough to get the click and absolutely nothing more.
The profound power of doing less. I love that.
Yeah.
We spent this entire deep dive figuring out how to master the perfect pre-selling handoff. We know how to navigate the algorithms, how to hook the human psyche, and how to format an environment that practically guarantees they eagerly click that link.
Yep.
But I want to leave you with a forward-looking question, something to examine in your own business immediately.
Okay.
What happens when your customer lands on the other side of that click? Take a moment today to audit the actual sales pages you are currently sending your audience to. If you have successfully utilized restraint, if you've built all that incredible trust by acting as the helpful, empathetic receptionist, is the surgeon waiting in the next room actually equipped to save their life with an incredible product?
That's the real test.
Exactly. Or are they a butcher whose messy, confusing sales page is going to completely ruin the reputation you just worked so hard to build? Keep that in mind the next time you design a campaign, because getting the click is really only half the battle.